Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I am very pleased to be joined this afternoon by Sherry, who's here to speak with us about the power of participating in the year-long retreat. Welcome, Sherry.
Well, thank you, Anna. It's hey. Lovely to be with you.
Great to have you. Where should we start?
I'm an escapee from email class land.
Giving those fingers a rest, huh?
I am moving from the fingers to the mouth. It's quite unusual.
Mm-hmm. So what would life like to say to you that much about the power of the year-long retreat?
Well, I think about this a lot, and I actually talk about this a lot because I think the year-long retreat has moved us as a Sangha into an extraordinarily new, different, exciting place.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've seen about it, there are a couple, three features. Of course, the first one is that we're doing it all together.
Yes, yes.
Right? And so what that does for us, of course, is give us an opportunity. So one of the things I love about the email class is that everybody in the class has the benefit of everybody else's practice.
Uh-huh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so it's like however many people there are in an event, we get the benefit of all of those people's practice and their insights.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We expand exponentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. And then, of course, we're all doing the same thing.
Yes.
Right? Now, with the Socratic email class, we're not, which gives a different kind of excitement to it because we get an insight into what's going on with all of these different people.
Yeah.
Right? And we get that insight with a year-long retreat as well because even though we're all doing the same assignment, how we each approach it, what we see, what we get out of it, what we make out of it, what we do with it, is unique. Mm-hmm. And very often what it does is, so somebody will say something, and I'll have the experience of, huh, I never thought of that. I would have never seen it that way. I know I would have never seen it that way, except mm-hmm. that person said it. And then that awareness is available to me, right? So how many is that? We're all, and then the everyday, the everyday. That, mm-hmm. right, that's the thing that just takes it and puts it right over the top,
yeah.
That it's everyday. And even when people are not able to be live with us every day, there are the recordings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even, it's a lot of months that we're doing this. And so people have all kinds of things. They go off on vacations. They go on work trips. They get sick. God help mm-hmm. us all. All kinds of things that keep people from being there live on the call. And yet the recordings are there.
Yeah.
So there's no... you know, the voice can't say, well, you missed that, so you might as well, you might as well quit because mm. now you're behind and no, you're not. And that was a big theme in this last year, right? People realizing that I'm not behind. I was doing whatever I was doing and I'm here and it's now and there is no such thing as behind.
Yeah.
You just listen to the recordings and you catch up with the assignments and we're all current.
Great.
So just those are my favorite elements of a year-long retreat.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, such powerful elements, huh? That we're all doing it together. We're all doing the same
mm-hmm.
thing. We're working with the same focus. We're working with the same assignment. And all each in our lives. So as you say, we bring all kind of different things to it. I'm looking out at this beautiful tree. And as you were saying that, I looked at the different leaves, right? They're all different and they're all...
Yes.
You know, kind of part of the whole. And we
yes.
get to see things that we wouldn't have seen otherwise because people bring their awarenesses and their insights to those calls.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And it is such a Sangha experience,
mm-hmm.
Because people are talking about themselves, their lives.
Yeah.
And over the course of the months, there's a real sense of cheering for one another.
Yes.
Right? Because we get in those places and we get stuck and it's hard and we're not seeing it, and then we have a breakthrough and there's an insight and awareness, and we get to know one another in much the way we get to, well, sometimes maybe we could say better, even than we're in a physical location together on retreat, which is a very intimate experience.
Yeah.
And this this year-long retreat is also, to me, very intimate.
Yes, yes, very intimate, and cheering everyone on as we listen to those calls.
Uh-huh.
And the beauty of it being over such a long period of time, as you say, we get to hear people check in at all different parts mm-hmm. of the process that they're in, and mm-hmm. we get to recognize that for ourselves too, right? That unfolding.
Yeah.
That,
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really powerful because, you know, one of the things that, of course, I've heard people come to practice and talk about forever, for as long as I've been doing practice, is the very common experience of I don't belong.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everybody, as far as I can tell, gets a message from ego of, well, I don't belong, or you don't belong. Mm-hmm. And when we participate in something like this, that story becomes very obviously a story because we do belong, and it's undeniable that we are a part of this kind of group transformation.
Group transformation, that really underlines the power of the year-long retreat, huh? That mm-hmm. it's the getting together to do it together that makes it so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And doing it mm-hmm. every day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as you said,
because, you know, oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, it you know, awareness practice is big and deep and challenging, right? And if we're trying to do it on our own, which, again, the voices of egocentricity would say, oh, you should be able to do this on your own. Well, nobody can do it on their own. That's just the reality. But if we were trying to do it on our own, you know, we would get somewhere in a lifetime.
Okay.
But if we're doing it together, the rate of change, it just accelerates in an extraordinary way. And we can see it and feel it in one another. And we can see it and feel it in ourselves.
Yes, and we can hear it on those calls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, those calls that are up on the site, so that even if we haven't missed a call, we can go back and listen to them. There's that incredible archive, right? So the weekends when there aren't the live
calls,
we get to be there on the archives.
There's really, and of course in the email class on these radio shows, whenever we get a chance to talk to people, record and listen. It's really important to record and listen. And I'll say to people, you know, we have like 100 years of open air archives. You know, just go there and listen. It's Sangha talking about practice.
Yeah.
And every person is every person. So you're going to see yourself in that. And the same with this. You know, people will talk about, I can't sleep. I say, well, get earbuds, put them in. And that's one of the things a person can listen to. Listen to those shows.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to your Sangha support you. even in the, you know, the 3 a.m. icy hand of ego around your spine that so many people dread. You know, if we're listening to those recordings, then we know we're not alone. We know it's all right. We're being held. We're being nurtured. We're being comforted.
Mm. We're not alone. It's all right. We're being nurtured. We're being comforted, and all that just the press of a button away with those
mm-hmm.
recordings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we are at the top of the hour, Sherry. Is there anything else you were seeing as we're wrapping up?
Well, the only thing, of course, I would say is, you know, don't be the one person who misses the opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a sign up is open now, isn't it?
People can
start signing up now.
Yeah. It
sure and of course, a lot of people are still in the email class, and so we're in the okay. Gotta get this under my belt first. It might be valid, but just to know, all right. So when whatever I'm involved in now is over, I don't have to be bereft. I can join the year long retreat, and here's my family.
Mhm, mhm, and it starts on March 16th, huh? So just a perfect, just under.
Yeah, right around the corner.
Right around the corner.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Anna. It's been a delight talking with you.
Oh, thank you, Sherry. Truly a delight, and look forward to the delights of the year-long retreat, huh?
Mhm. Yeah. Me too. All right. Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.
All right. Thank you, Anna, and thank you, Sherry. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
I enjoyed that conversation, and I'm looking forward to another year of year-long retreat. Sounds fabulous.
Oh, yes, and I will wrap up the email class, and we'll have 2 weeks before we are back together as a Sangha on a daily basis. It will be such fun.
Yes, it will. And it's funny you said 2 weeks, and I can't imagine that 2 weeks go by and there's no practice activities. So, because it's such a consistent, steady support all the time, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is
exactly.
fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think we were looking at this. It's making a change for good, but not making a change for good in the same way we were doing it last year, but simply a completely different, consistent focus on process rather than content. So something to look forward to.
Wow.
Within the spirit of repetition, right?
Yes, it's critical, isn't it, that repetition?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my sense from practice is that each of these opportunities gives me a slightly different lens, slightly different tool, slightly different mm-hmm. perspective to continue to look at whatever is up for me.
Yes, and I was just looking at that, right, Michael, because what's in the moment is never the same without something that tells me it is.
Mm-hmm.
And what arises for me about something now may have arisen before or may not have, but why not look at it? Because it's there to be looked at in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Fabulous. And
all right,
I
think you have some
announcements.
Yes,
I do. Last year, our training focused on the movement from seeing through conditioned mind to looking at conditioned mind. Building on that enlightening experience, the 2020 Making a Change for Good year-long retreat will support us in seeing through life lenses to be present to the vibrant, ever-changing, and joyful nature of life. This retreat will run from March 16th through December 10th and will include daily assignments and lively conversations with the guide on weekday radio shows. And would you like to live in the privileged environment all the time and not just on retreats? A new group coaching class will explore the powerful elements of the privileged environment and look at how to implement these elements in daily life. The class will be held on Fridays, March 6th through 27th. And join us for the Don't Suffer, Communicate retreat, May 15th through 20th, as we explore how to bypass ego and communicate authentically to achieve true connection. This retreat at the beautiful Santa Sabina Retreat Center in the San Francisco Bay Area includes guidance with Sherry, yoga, and delicious food. This retreat is a must for anyone who wishes to acquire or honed facilitation skills. And for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Ashwini today, you can make a show by pressing star 6 and then 1, and a conversation on one topic of about 5 minutes in length is great. Okay, Ashwini, I think we are ready here.
Great.
Just get the queue here. Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Ashwini. Hello, Michael. This is Kim calling from Vashon.
Hey, Kim.
Hey, Kim.
I'm counting the minutes until the year-long retreat, I have to say. It has been kind of a withdrawal.
I know exactly how you feel.
So, I am having a bit of an issue. So I've been reading the communication book over and over, and I'm sort of studying it like a textbook now on my fourth reading through it. And what I came across, I mean, what kind of dropped in was that, you know, it relates directly to the relationship with my husband, okay? Mm-hmm. So there are times when we're distant, and there are times when we are closer. And I see that as kind of a normal, you know, after 26 years of marriage, I see that as a normal you know, undulation in intimacy. Mm-hmm. And in the past, it's been really scary. And mm-hmm. after all these years, I'm starting to think, well, this is just a normal undulation. And we are close because there's no such thing as separateness, you know, so looking mm-hmm. at a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. However, I would like to, you know, be able to communicate, to talk to him, and feel intimacy. And I get stopped for several reasons because in the book it says, you know, you need to do an RL with yourself and talk about everything you could possibly talk about, you know, with a mentor before you even broach a subject with a person, and then rehearse, and, you know, there's some specific steps. And so I've been kind of just going with that, and just there's been quiet between us. And then on Valentine's Day, which is very much, you know, high expectations for people who are, you know, supposedly in love, we had a big blow up, and I didn't have the expectations. I knew that he was in a depressed kind of state. This time of the year is very hard. And so I was taken really by surprise when he came in with kind of this, you know, what am I getting out of this relationship? Kind of just confronting me, you know, about our marriage. And I, you know, employed all of the techniques that I have been studying and mostly listened to him. You know, my heart was beating and I was on the verge of tears. And finally I said, you know, would it be okay if I reflected what you're saying? And so I did, you know, with almost tears. And then I said, now, can I tell you, you know, what's going on for me? And, you know, and so I did. I explained that, you know, when he is in these kinds of moods where he is mean, feels like it's meanness coming, mm-hmm. it's hard for me to really want to be close to him and be intimate and connect. And I said, okay, so now can you repeat what you said, what you heard me say? And he said, I'm always mean and you never want to connect with me. And I said, actually, no, that's not what I said. So we had a real conversation, is what, for the first time, I think, ever, in our relationship. And still, it was extremely, like, conditioning just, you know, raked me over the coals you know, because I feel like I've been trying to be this person that he's wanted me to be for a long time. And I see that as conditioning. I see that as a subpersonality of a child who's just trying to cover all their bases so that maybe the person will be happy. And there's nothing, it's not going to, it doesn't work because his happiness comes from inside. It's not something I can give him. And so I guess my question is, how does a person connect with an intimate, you know, with a person in their life, a family member, using these techniques? Like I get to always, the only thing that you need to do is record and listen with yourself. And so I'm left with nothing, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, yes and no, I think, if I'm following what you're saying, right, Kim? Because everything that you laid out, the first thing you said is it's an undulation in terms of distance and connection. And if we take it out of a content realm, we take it to a universal level, what you would say is there are times when I'm identified and times when I'm not identified, right? When I'm identified, yes. I'm not in relationships with the intelligence that animates, and I feel separate. That's when I feel like I long for someone else to give me what I don't have, right? I'm looking for it from someone other than me. And yes. So, and when I feel connected to my heart and to life, there's a way in which I'm available to be in connection with anyone else. Which is why we say that the whole thing about recording and listening and like that is simply to establish that relating to you, not relating to the other person. So, for example, so then you're available to, if you practice that, you're available to be present through facilitation to someone else. And that's what you were able to have a very, very difficult but very, very authentic conversation with your husband, which felt like a real conversation, right? Where
yes.
he's allowed to have his experience, which allows him to feel heard. You reflect that. You don't deny it. You don't get identified. You just facilitate him in that experience. And then you get to say what it is that's going on for you. Now, that's a definition of intimacy that we don't often hear. Where a relating happens, right? It doesn't matter whether it doesn't matter that we only relate when we're both happy, because that's an easy place in relationship. I'm happy, you're happy, let's hold hands and be happy together. But I'm unhappy, and it's at those times where I feel like you need to be, it would be helpful if the person that I'm relating to is there to hold my hand also, right? But that person, if their buttons are being pushed by what I'm going to say, is not going to be available for the relating. So it all comes together that the recording and listening happens at many times for process to a place where you can be with your experience. And because you know how to be with your experience, you can be with your experience when someone else is having a difficult experience or a happy experience, right? So the process, what the process does is to rewire our definition of intimacy. Intimacy is when I can be with me and not leave me when I'm with you, no matter where you are. Right? And yeah. I think you just had a definition of intimacy with your husband, which is an authentic connection where both of you could communicate what was going on with you. So just imagine if you could do that all the time and not indulge a conversation afterwards, which feels like it leads to a place of separation. So what happened was there was a period of time where he was identified, you were able to facilitate him, you expressed what you were going to say, and he responded with identification. Now, where are you going to go with that, right? You can go to a place of identification where you feel absolutely devastated that the person you love basically misunderstood your attempt to communicate and to connect and walked off. And so where do I process that? Where do I not leave myself in that process? It's with the recorder. I get to talk about how hurt I feel, how betrayed I feel, because at this point, he's not there to listen to that. Right? He's too identified to do that. But if he was doing the work that you were doing, of getting clear for himself what was going on for him and being able to own his experience and process with you, it might have gone a different way. Mm-hmm. So you get to sit with the recorder and look at what happened and be clear that you're not going to leave yourself no matter what happened in that relationship. And then at some point where it feels like, again, if you feel like it's important because this is the person you're spending your life with, you could just say, you know what, do you have a minute to process like we do in processing? I'm going to preface this with preliminary phases and everything else. I just want you to know that I don't think you're mean, that I love you, and that's not what I'm saying. And that's clear. That's authentic. You have expressed what you want to express, and you're attempting to connect. The point with all of that is it's true. You can be happy, completely content, without any needs with your recorder, and you could choose to be with someone in a way that doesn't cause either of you suffering through communication by indicating what's going on for you and by reflecting, drawing out, and facilitating that process so at least one of you is not in an ego place suffering in an interaction.
Wow, okay. I got a little part of the way there, and then a lot of old conditioning kind of swoops into the into the whole mix, like a vacuum. He's going to leave you. You're going to be on the street, blah, blah, blah. You know, all these old stories. You know, you're,
right.
You're not trying hard enough. Try harder. I mean, the thing is that I saw that all. And
that's exactly right.
It was
perfect.
Still very, you know, it was still
real
hard. Hard, I guess.
Yeah.
I just, you know, it was hard.
So hard,
did you say? Hard. It was very hard. And my analogy that I've been kind of living by is, you know, I'm digging water in one spot. And then I start to think to myself, maybe I'm digging water in a spot that's not going to ever draw water. You know, that, and I don't know. I mean, I guess that's conditioning popping into, right?
Well, and you don't have to avoid any of your experiences, right, Kim? That's really what we're saying. So you still, conditioning, you can see it's conditioning that's attempting to give you, attempting to scare you, attempting to make you go into those survival behaviors when you've had a huge insight that is, over these many years of our relationship, this is the undulation. Within the undulation, what I'm attempting to do is to be really clear about what's going on for me and to keep ego out of any interaction I have with this person that I love, because I have no expectations that he's going to contribute to my happiness, but I do want the ability to communicate because that's the level of intimacy that I have, right? And ego comes in there to undercut by reestablishing the old fear. So I work on those fears. And so, yeah, it just came in and said, well, really, you have to go back to trying really hard to be the person that he wants you to be, or he's going to leave you. Well, you've seen over and over again that you could try to be the person he wants you to be. He hasn't left you yet, and it's not working. It's not resulting in the connection that you're looking for. So it seems to me that what conditioning does for us is to smush all things together so tightly that we don't know where to start, because you pull one thread and then everything seems connected. Mm-hmm. So your ability to be with yourself through the recorder and process your experience is one thing. Your ability to facilitate him when he's having an experience is another thing. Both of
Got
them
it.
Result in connection, right? It's connection to you. Or connection to life, let's just say, that's maintained in both cases. You're just attempting to keep ego out of your head in both cases in order for you to stay as centered as possible, as loving as possible, as available as possible to make sure that the human being that you have any ability to, the only human being that you have to love and to take care of is taken care of, whether she's alone with the voices in her head or in an interaction with someone with voices in her head and voices coming at her from the other person.
Mm-hmm.
it's not exclusive. You can communicate with him through facilitation, which is facilitate his experience, or say what's going on for you from that centered place, but be able to deal with whatever goes on for you regardless of what comes back, right? Because the conditioning says, well, if I'm doing everything I'm doing in order to be centered and available and loving and kind, then the other person will respond in the same way. And in most of our experiences, they don't. Mm-hmm. And so now we go back to feeling separate and hurt and feeling bad and that we'd never have this connection with this other person, when what we're proving to ourselves is that the only person we ever have any connection to is ourselves.
Yeah, and so then this is where we started, right, a little bit, is that the communication book is not necessarily about communicating with another person, per se.
No, it's the, because, so true communication is processing, right, where I can say what I want to say, and you get to say what you want to say, and we go back and forth in order to assist each other to witness our process as a way that it's not a conversation between two egos.
Right.
But that requires two people to do that. So if you are attempting to keep ego out of the conversation for you, then you have to be all right that the other person may or may not be in that place to receive that. So then what do you do with that? You get to communicate without any attachment to the outcome, but you don't get to lose connection because the connection is in the only place where it can be.
With myself, with my own.
That's exactly right. And to pay attention to whether there's intensity of feeling, there's all of that sensation around what it means that the person that you're in relationship with does not behave the way they're supposed to. And what all of the, as you said, the stories are intense and it's really, really hard. But that's where you practice going, no, that's ego. I don't believe it. You know, that's a different kind of training. So there's so many parts to communication, and that's the composite of the book, the communication with yourself, the communication with the person you're interacting with, both that how you make sure that no matter what comes at you, you're able to work with it. Right?
Yeah.
And it's all just part and parcel of staying present, taking care of Kim, being in connection with the intelligence that animates, and being able to ask and request from a very centered place about what you want.
Easier with other people than with him.
But unbelievably, right, Kim? Because we also know this empirically, and Sherry said it so many times that we hook up with people who further our karma, right?
Right.
They're our best opportunity to see all of the ways in which all of the things we have to let go of, and it's really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I think I see what I need to see going forward.
Well, a couple of things I would say about that, Kim. I think studying it as a textbook is fantastic. Working with it the way you've been working with is really wonderful. It's very complex in terms of what that book suggests. What does intimacy mean? What does connection mean? What does true communication mean? And so it's a practice, and you want to work with it. And if you can come on retreat with us in Santa Sabina, I think it will be phenomenal.
I wish. Yeah. I'm working on that, too. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gasho. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Kim, take care of her. You know,
thank you.
She's been through a hard time on Valentine's Day, so she gets to be with that disappointment, right? Because something that's looking for love was rejected in a huge way, and she was really, really present for that conversation. So now she gets to be accepted in unconditional love and acceptance for the experience that she had and the disappointment that she experienced or the shaking that she felt in that interaction.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Kim. And Ashwini, what dropped in for me during that conversation is the courage and the willingness to look at these issues that are challenging for each of us, and the willingness to keep showing up for that. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, and it's a very confusing place, right? The one we were looking at with Kim, where we're so conditioned for intimacy to look a certain way, and then being beaten bloody when that doesn't happen. And then working so hard to make it happen, and still it doesn't look that way, and having to rewire not just our identities, but what we think of intimacy.
Yes, 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 exactly. Ashwini, we're going to break and hear from our sponsor, and then we'll come back to talk with more callers.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Oh, hello?
Hello?
Hi, this is Andrea.
Hey, Andrea.
Hi. Well, I'm calling because, well, I'm also looking at a communication issue. So it's something I've been looking at for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked about it a while, and I just feel like I have been getting identified with it.
Uh-huh.
And so it's basically this colleague at work that I've been having difficult communications with.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what I've been noticing, I've been processing a lot of it. I had basically, how do I say this, done a lot of work around it, seen a lot of subpersonalities, and I'd managed to disidentify for quite a while, but then what I noticed was I got really identified last week, and yesterday I was really identified. And I used some of the recordings. I listened to some of the recordings where I got guidance, and recordings that I had made about it, and I found that helpful. And what I noticed is that I have some beliefs about this,
mm-hmm.
which is some of the beliefs are that I need to be by myself because I feel really lonely when I'm at work. And there's this conditioning, just a huge amount of self-hate coming in. And basically what it's telling me is that everybody, you know, that she's really popular, everybody likes her, everyone hates you. And even though she gossips and says mean things, that doesn't matter. They all really like her. And, you know, this big story about how unfair it all is. And so I was just really, really, really identified with that story yesterday. And
mm-hmm.
essentially locking myself in the office with self-hate. And
what a horrible place to be, huh?
Yeah, especially since I share the same wall with her. So she's in the office right next to me. And so self-hate is looking for every kind of bit of evidence about what's wrong with me. And even though self-hate projects that she's not such a nice person, that, well, it doesn't matter. And, you know, all these projections about her that she's able to, like, she's able to do all these things that I could never do. Like, she's able to basically just say exactly how she feels to people and boss them around, and people seem to love it and suck it up, whereas I could never do those things. My conditioning would never let me do those things. I have to be meek. I have to stay in my office and not say anything and sit with self-hate. So that's what I was seeing. I was seeing all that. And anyhow, it just got to a point where I recorded and listened last night. I shared with my husband about it, and what it came to was there's this belief that I can't communicate to anyone until I'm enlightened. So basically, I have to sit there with self-hate and be pummeled and pay all my attention to self-hate and somehow get out of it all by myself. And by, you know, just by self-will, by recording and listening, I have to do it all by myself, and I can't communicate. And there's this belief that there's another belief I have, which is that if people aren't communicating with me, like if they just don't say hello, or else, you know, I'm in my office and they don't say anything to me, that means, oh, they hate me. I did something terrible. And so I saw that belief as well. And so, big, strong belief.
Can I stop you there, Andrea, just to check in about... Michael, is there an echo here? Andrea, do you hear that echo?
Yes, I hear the echo.
Oh, I don't hear the echo.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll just keep going. And
are you on a speakerphone, Andrea?
Yeah, I'm on my computer.
Okay, well, let's just keep going and see how we do. So, Andrea, when you say you're alone with self-hate and cannot communicate, are you saying, for example, that because the belief is if someone doesn't say hello to you, they hate you,
yeah,
you're just in that place of, okay, they hate you. That's what self-hate says, and that's all you're allowed to hear. You don't get to say hello and find out if someone would say hello back to you, for example, or say, hey, how are you doing? Is there something that I did? And check it out. Is there something that I did that upset you? You're not allowed to ask that either. So your only option is to listen to self-hate and believe it, because that keeps the belief alive that everybody hates you without you being able to check it out.
Well, and that's the interesting thing. So I changed my behavior today.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so I went into my colleague who's next door, who I consider a friend, and I just went in and I talked to him. I just basically said, hello, how are you doing? And then everything was fine.
Mm-hmm. It is so often the case, right, Andrea? It's so important for you to do this work to realize the beliefs that keep you trapped, unable to communicate, isolated with ego. With ego saying you've got to get enlightened before you open your mouth and interact with anybody. And so the world gets smaller and smaller and more repressed and suppressed, because all you've got going is going on in your head. And so when you step out of that and just interact with someone, you realize that the reality that conditioned mind is creating for you, that you're inhabiting, is not actually what's out there.
Yeah, and the thing I wanted to share is that it involved a change in behavior, which was outside of ego's comfort zone, because, you know, when you believe everyone hates you, and then you have to go and talk to someone, and, you know, that's one of the hardest things to do, but I just did it, and
wonderful.
So I've been
good for you.
Yeah, so I've been looking at a change in behavior, because the other thing is that I've noticed that's something I've been looking at, because You know, my son has really, he sees a lot of things about the practice, and like, he is extremely, able to see things and, you know, like very self-aware. Yet, often it doesn't translate into a change in behavior. And I noticed that, I was getting very frustrated with him because I have another belief, which is that if you're able to be self-aware and able to see this conditioning and talk about it, you should be able to change your behavior.
Right. And it's such a humbling experience for us to see how often we stick with the conditioning and see it, but don't choose something different because it's not available to us unless we practice with it, right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is it seems like there's different levels of practice. It seems like there's the first level where you realize that you're not conditioning, and then you're able to see it, but it seems like it takes a whole new level to be able to, sometimes, I'm not saying all the time, but sometimes to be able to actually go out of the comfort zone, because the virtual reality is not just the conversation, but it's like being in a virtual reality where it's not only, you know, hate radio going on, but it's hate feelings, hate sensations, you know?
We're completely identified with self-hate, right? Because
yes,
it's either directed towards me and I see it, the hateful person I am, or it's directed towards the other person as the hateful person. Doesn't matter. I'm experiencing hatred, which is an awful, which is awful, and I get blamed for it, right? Because I'm hosting it. It's happening in me. I identify with that, and so as you said, absolutely, the first level of practice is to realize that that's not you. There is a way in which we get identified with that, and when we disidentify from it, there's the ability to then have an alternate experience, but that also ends up having to go up against the fear or the identity that doesn't want to find out, or all of the mechanisms that ego has in place in order for an authentic experience not to be had, right?
Yes.
All right. So that's why we do the work that we do, and we pay the level of attention you're paying, because you realize, I think you started off it's so beautifully, right? I've been looking at this issue, and I know I get identified, and I know I can disidentify. And I was in the identification, and I worked with the identification, because working with the identification is an important aspect of practice. It tells us so much about what's going on for us, and all these beliefs, and everything that's being kept in place, so that I can make a different choice. Right? I can make a behavior choice that's different. And so I love what you said, Andra, because it just normalizes the fact that an identification is not bad. We're not in this never to get identified.
Mm-hmm.
We're in this to pay attention through identification and disidentification, because we're learning so much about how we as human beings are put together.
Right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, it just brings me to that thing that Sherry says, when you have a child, you are not ever going to ask how you're going to have to love the child, right?
Mm-hmm.
The child is in your life. You're just going to work with that child no matter what the child is going through. They're going to have ups and downs and up and lows and highs and tantrums and difficulties and all of those things, the love remains constant, and then you work out the day-to-day, right?
Yeah.
And that is your relationship with your life. I mean, in your life, you have this colleague, and as long as you're in this job, you have this colleague with whom you have to work out whatever you've got to work out in order not to suffer and be free now. And that's what you're doing.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting, because when I did talk to, you know, my colleague who I feel, you know, much more comfortable with, it completely changed my experience, and I disidentified. And so then conditioning comes in and says, well, you shouldn't have to talk to someone to disidentify. You should be able to just do it by yourself, you know?
Yeah, that's what we file under Cropola, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because essentially what I was doing was I was testing the truth. I was going to, well, is what conditioning's telling me true? And I went out and I tested the experiment. I did the experiment. I tested the hypothesis that conditioning said, and I found it to be false. And I couldn't really do that without changing my behavior.
Exactly. Because if we notice the patterns of conditioned mind, it's going to keep you from doing the experiment as much as it can through fear anomaly, right? So you don't want to find out. And you've got to do it by yourself, and that's the right spiritual thing to do, and whatever. So you never have an experience that will be contradictory to what the conditioned story is. And then if you do have an experience that's different, then it has to talk you into not doing that again, right? So, okay, well, that might have happened that once, but in order to be the good, right spiritual person, you've got to work out your salvation diligently so you can't test it again.
Right.
And as you practice with that, you go, really? I'm going to test that hypothesis now. I'm going to experiment with, really?
Yeah.
Who says? Yeah. It's really like what it comes down to is I keep paying attention, and I keep paying attention to where I'm getting the information from.
Mm-hmm.
And if I know I'm getting it from conditioning, I want to have that information from life.
Yes. Yes.
So I listen to what life is asking me to do in order to for life to tell me what's going on, rather than what conditioning says is the truth.
Yeah. Wow. It's just so interesting how conditioning just has such rigid and set ideas about what practice is and what compassion is and what everything
is.
Oh
God. Yeah. Well, and we don't ever want to listen to ego tell us anything about our practice or the practice or anything, right? Because it's like there's an agenda there of you never waking up.
Right.
So it's going to be putting you into a structure of confinement where it's your only source of information. And that's really what you're describing, right? The trap is completely secured, and there are no exits. Every time you try to maneuver within that system, there's another block that makes you isolated with ego. And so having realized that, you practice the behavior change that allowed you to exit the system. And for however much you spend talking to that person, there was a way in which you were not in relationship with ego, and you were free to have your own experience. And so we have to stop believing what the voices say and start having a relationship with life. And ego will throw a hissy fit when you do that.
Yeah. And I guess I just have to, well, what ego's saying right now is, well, ego's saying, well, I guess the next level of practice is figuring out how to communicate with this person.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So then, yeah, there, set Andrea up for something that ego wants, and ego is going to control, and whatever. And so what you apply the same process, which is, really?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yeah,
do
maybe
I have to do it the way you say it? Actually, no. I'm going to sit and see what life says. I'm going to record a Muslim. I'm going to see what the mentor says. And just like that very small behavior change that you did, which allowed you to test the experiment with something, maybe you do decide to communicate with this person. And all you say is hello.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to, in the next interaction with this person, because what is communication? We were just talking to Kim about that. Perhaps all you ever do is be a silent reflector in the interaction. There's good communication because you were out of the conversation with conditioned mind throughout that entire interaction, and that's authenticity, right?
Mm.
That's authenticity in communication, even if no words are exchanged.
I like that. That's really, I never would, of course, that wouldn't come in, that wouldn't drop in for me.
Because communication is currently is when ego says whatever it wants to say to whoever it wants to say, however it wants to say it, whenever it wants to say it, and then to blame you for whatever results, right?
Yeah.
But the way we define communication in the communication book is to keep ego out of the conversation. Don't be ego's mouthpiece. So in an interaction, if ego's not talking, and the human being is allowed to have attention on awareness by purely reflecting the person that they're interacting with, that's actually good communication because there wasn't ego involved in that interaction.
Yeah, that's, wow, this is really helpful.
Right, and you don't even have to reflect her verbally, right, Andrea? The technique in the book is just in your head, say whatever she's saying because that allows you to be present and not interacting with ego in that moment.
I
do that all the time. I do that all the time to stay present in difficult situations.
Okay, well, I have practice because I do reflective listening buddies too. So.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you can go one up, just reflect her verbally then, you know, or in the next interaction, I get to ask one clarifying question, or that's my practice because all I'm practicing because communication from ego's perspective would be to either have her get to like you or for you to tell her how she's doing that something she's doing that doesn't work for you, and that's communication. But communication is facilitation. Can you facilitate her? Can you be present enough to facilitate an interaction with her? That's communication.
Yeah.
So you took ego's definition of communication and translated it into a practice definition of communication, which is facilitating. Keep ego out of the conversation.
Wow, that's okay. Well, that's really helpful. I really appreciate that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Keep us posted, huh?
Yes, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Andrea. It's wonderful to hear about practice successes.
Gosho.
Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, Andrea. I love that topic, Ashwini. And in the interest of time, I'm going to bring on our next caller.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini and Michael. It's Celia in Seattle.
Hey, Celia.
Hey, Celia.
Hey. My question tonight is, I'm in the Socratic class, and I described what I thought I had found a subpersonality, which I described, and Sherry said, that's not a subpersonality, that's egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. And I had felt quite proud of myself for identifying this character, and I went, really? That's not a subpersonality? I mean, we looked at subpersonality so much in the, through the year-long retreat And so I'm confused. How do I know what I'm coming to see is a subpersonality, or is it self-hate, or is it important, or should I not
well,
care?
I think well, that's exactly the right track, right, Celia? That's the process of guidance. So you saw something. You brought it to the guide, and the guide said, look here. So then you look there. But not look in order to know. Just look to see what's revealed. Because what I project that you're in, again, you know, for you to look and see, is a process that's so familiar to all of us, which is figuring it out. Because if I figure out whether this is egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, or if it's a subpersonality, then what? What do you get from knowing the answer to that question? Do you become more present? Do you suffer less?
The reason,
a rhetorical question. I'm not asking you to answer it, right?
Well, you know what what I thought was, oh, I've identified a subpersonality. I can extend kindness to the subpersonality, and that will take care of the problem.
Uh-huh. Which is
or that will satisfy her, and she will not bother me anymore.
That's right. Right. So we're looking for an outcome, right? And that process is good to see because so and the reason I would say that's interesting is so you got, oh, this is a subpersonality, and you got the reflection that, no, it's ego. And then you're forced to question why it was it, when we encounter guidance that is contrary to what we're expecting, it's a very good place in practice because it forces us to look. So what you saw in looking as we are processing this is, oh, there's a certain belief that if a sub personality is identified and kindness is offered, the suffering will go away. Now, just because what you saw was egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate, it doesn't mean that there's a way in which you don't attend to egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate and the problem wouldn't go away either. The problem is egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate, right? So it's very useful to know the layer on layer that of attention on the conditioned beliefs and assumptions that get revealed in the process of looking, because we're only interested in the looking. We're not interested in what we're looking at. Right?
Yeah.
We want attention
That's
on
right.
awareness. The contents of awareness are fascinating, perhaps, but not the point.
Yeah. It's not the point to find, to sort of nail something down, I guess.
Right. Exactly. Because what wants to be permanent in a world that changes every moment?
Yeah. Well, I was so desperate to get rid of the suffering. I just.
Well, yes, we are. So then what are we willing to do when we want to let go of the suffering, right? We're willing to look at anything. So I found the subpersonality. Okay, well, it's not a subpersonality, it's ego. Okay, well, let me look at that. Because if I'm interested in letting go of the suffering, then I'm open to guidance about looking at anything. And when I look at anything, I'm not suffering because my attention is on awareness looking. I am out of the suffering. Unless I leave that looking to say, oh, I need to find something that I can put into a little box as a result of which I stop suffering. And it's never our experience. It doesn't matter how much we find out, it doesn't lead anywhere except to be folded into conditioned mind. So, okay, let's just see, follow this through, right? You found a subpersonality, you offer her kindness, and you still don't end suffering. It's what we find out, right? Because it's not, that's not the process of transformation. It's like looking in the wrong place, hoping for something, a silver bullet of some kind, so we can stop looking. That's what conditioning wants us to do. Here, look here, go down this path, figure it out, and once you figure it out, you'll never suffer again.
Yeah.
And we buy into it, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Over and over again. Without realizing, really, I just need to stop listening to something that tells me that suffering ends in this particular way. Because how does it know that? Is it my experience? Don't I see the same form of it show up in so many different ways? And there's no problem it shows up. I just don't attend to it. I don't have to believe it. I don't have to do what it says. I don't have to go figure it out. I could just be here. And I can be in kindness without having to extend kindness to someone that needs kindness shown to them.
Wait a minute.
There is no someone.
I could... Okay, wow, that one, I don't have to, could you say that again?
Well, I'm just riffing here on what you said, right?
Yeah.
If I showed kindness to this subpersonality, she'll have what she wants and she'll, the problem will go away.
Yes.
Right? I mean, what we're looking at is there is no someone. There's awareness and there's attention. And then there's that force we call ego that creates someones and somethings and all of that in the contents of conditioned mind. So if kindness is what is needed, let's experience kindness. I can go I can offer kindness to the person I meet next. I can offer kindness to Celia by taking care of her.
Yeah.
And when I'm in the process of kindness, I'm not suffering.
Yeah.
Because suffering is not a process of kindness, right?
Yeah. That really resonates. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was believing that offering kindness was some kind of it was a sort of a weird idea. And wasn't actually being kind at all, really, to me.
Right. That's why it is egocentric, right?
If
we can tell, that's what the guide said. The process you're in is outcome-oriented, content-focused, maintains the self, and doesn't take care of you. Anything that fits that definition is egocentric, karmic conditioning, self-hate.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're exactly right. So now you can be kind, truly kind, not kind to someone in order to get something, to have a different experience.
Wow, you know, I can see that popping up in a lot of other places, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, great. Well, the funny thing is it came up in this retreat situation I have where there's hours and hours of sitting and believing that I should be able to be happy sitting for hours and hours. And the reason I'm not happy is because there's this subpersonality, and if I take care of the subpersonality, then I'll be happy for hours and hours sitting on a cushion. But it doesn't work that way.
No, because I project, this is what you've been looking at in the class, as long as my attention is on a conversation in conditioned mind, doesn't matter whether I'm sitting on the cushion for 5 minutes or hours and hours or walking, I can still be unhappy because having my attention on a conversation in conditioned mind is the definition of suffering and unhappiness. Now, if I don't have a conversation with my attention on conditioned mind, I can look to see if there's physical discomfort in having to sit for hours. And I could be interested in that because the body is not designed to sit for hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I can get up and walk and move because that's what the body, that's what takes care of the body and is kind to the body.
Mm-hmm.
That's got nothing to do with happiness and unhappiness. Happiness is when I'm here and not in a conversation, and unhappiness is when I'm gone in a conversation. Doesn't matter where I am.
Right.
And when we get out of the conversation, we can be in the reality of here to say, now, does it feel kind to sit for hours and hours? Well, somebody said we need to do this to be the right spiritual person. Is that my experience? Sitting for hours and hours, I seem to be having the conversation with self-hate over and over again. That's not practicing presence.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? So
and
if
that,
I sit for hours
that's what's going
hours,
on. Yeah.
Exactly. It's one of the reasons why we have we don't sit for hours and hours, because sitting for hours and hours but having the same relationship with conditioned mind on the cushion is no different than having a relationship with conditioned mind as you go about your life. There's no transformation happening there.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Lots to see, isn't it?
Yeah, lots.
And since we concluded that seeing was the whole point, I think you're having the right experience.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Celia. Don't stop looking.
Yeah. Thank you. I won't. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Celia. And it sounds like we are all having the right experience, Ashwini. So
whatever that is,
thing.
Right, Michael?
Yeah, the good thing about that is it can be whatever it is.
Yes, in
yes.
the moment.
Yes. And so I want to thank you and all of our callers and all of our listeners for another wonderful experience tonight. I'm super grateful for it. And go
thank
happy.
You, Michael. I'm glad the technology worked out.
Me too. No kidding. Mm-hmm. All right. Good night.
Take care. Good night.